Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now an intro in which I trot out every tired caffeine cliche in the world by way of introducing Murray Carpenter, author of the new book Caffeinated, How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. So perk up, everybody. We're about to brew a conversation with Murray that will leave you buzzing. He's no average cup of joe because he's been a longtime journalist and did tons and tons of research for this new book, looking at both the cultural and physiological impact of caffeine. I apologize. It's out of my system. No more of that. But the point is, it's amazing how little we know about caffeine, something that is so common in our everyday lives. But Murray Carpenter is here to help break it down and answer your questions. Hi, Murray. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
And first, we should say that you're an unabashed caffeine addict. You are out about that in your book. What's your daily intake?
Well, I have to be careful about this because it's 3 to 4 cups of coffee. But, you know, everybody thinks of a cup of coffee differently. Some people, 3 or 4 cups of coffee would be 3 of those 16-ounce cups from Starbucks. But I'm about 3 to 4 6-ounce cups of coffee, so approximately 24 ounces of coffee a day.
I guess that's a lot of coffee by most standards, right? A lot of caffeine, I should say, by most standards.
It's a lot of caffeine. It actually puts me right about in the average of most American coffee drinkers.
Uh-huh.
So most American coffee drinkers take about 300 to 400 milligrams of caffeine daily via coffee, and that happens to be about where I stand.
Listeners, anything you always wanted to know about caffeine but had no one to ask, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or your coffee conundrums, because we're going to structure much of this conversation around a series of coffee conundrums inspired by Murray Carpenter's book, Caffeinated, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Murray, because I mentioned that we know less about caffeine than we tend to think, let's structure this interview around a number of what we're calling caffeine conundrums. So conundrum number one, it has all the effects of a drug, but we don't necessarily think of it as a drug. Would you call caffeine a drug?
Yes, it absolutely is a drug, but this is a terrific conundrum because the fact that most of us take it every single day, and most of us really we're dependent on this drug. It makes it an awkward conversation, really, to think of it as a drug. But yeah, absolutely, caffeine is a drug. Which is to say, you take caffeine, it has predictable physiological effects. You know, it increases your alertness, decreases your tiredness, it increases your vigor, even raises your mood. And these are effects that caffeine will have consistently in most people. So, yeah, it's been known for more than 100 years that caffeine is a drug.
So caffeine conundrum number two. It's a huge part of a lot of people's everyday lives, but many of us treat it very casually. And you sort of point out that there isn't really anything else that we do every day that has this sort of effect that we still think of so casually. People who drink 3-4 cups a day for 20 years still don't think of themselves as being drug addicts or having a serious relationship with a substance, right?
Yeah, and right. This is really fascinating. And in one way, it speaks to the fact that caffeine is a remarkably safe habit when used moderately. So most of us can do, you know, take caffeine, three or four cups of coffee, for example, a day and not experience any bad side effects. But there are some people who really, for whom caffeine is not a great drug. People who will experience insomnia and anxiety. Those are kind of the biggest side effects. But yeah, I think the fact that it's relatively sort of a mild stimulant, as we usually take it, and relatively safe, I think it allows us to view it rather casually.
I think Lisa in Wantage has a caffeine conundrum. Hi, Lisa. You're on WNYC.
Thanks for taking my call. It's interesting because this question just came up in my home last week. My 15-year-old son is doing a research paper on headaches, in particular migraine headaches, and he learned all over research it says that caffeine can cause headaches. He and I both suffer from migraine headaches, and we both find that the caffeine actually takes away our headaches.
And wow, great question.
And I noticed that line in your book where you point out that a lot of people coming out of surgery suffer headaches, post-operative headaches. And there's a theory that a lot of this is because of caffeine withdrawal from people who've gone off their coffee regimens because they were going in for an operation.
It's fascinating. So this is sort of two ends of the caffeine headache spectrum. Caffeine has a very complex relationship with headache. So for some people, it can trigger headaches. And even in some people who suffer from migraines, caffeine can trigger headaches. But it can also be a very, very effective treatment for migraine headaches. In fact, caffeine can be such an effective treatment for people who suffer migraines that there are caffeine suppositories for people who are suffering migraines who are so severely afflicted that they're too nauseated to take a pill. So, it can do that. But then additionally, one of the primary symptoms of caffeine withdrawal for anyone who uses caffeine regularly, daily, and goes without for a day or two is a headache.
Are either of these things because they tend to open the blood vessels in your brain or to your brain? Is that the right way to put it?
Well, yes and no. I mean, again, the relationship is complex. One of the things that caffeine does in your brain is it actually constricts some of the blood vessels in your brain. And the theory on some of the withdrawal headaches is that it's actually those blood vessels relaxing and the blood kind of pounding into those blood vessels that's creating that withdrawal headache.
Lisa, did you say your 15-year-old drinks a lot of coffee along with you?
He doesn't drink actually. So we're two ends of the spectrum. So I drink just about one cup, sometimes two, of pretty strong espresso in the morning, and that's it. Unless I get a migraine, then I drink another cup of very strong espresso, and that does seem to help sometimes. My son never drinks caffeine at all, unless he gets a headache. And when I do give him a cup of coffee at that point, it really seems to help.
Well, I'm curious, have either of you tried Anacin or Excedrin or any of the other over-the-counter headache formulas that use caffeine?
Yeah, I have, and Excedrin in particular, and it didn't really seem to do much of anything for me.
Because those have caffeine in them? Is that what you're getting at, Murray?
Yes, and the combination of aspirin, acetaminophen, and caffeine seems to be a remarkably effective treatment for headaches. And yeah, Anacin and Excedrin have long had caffeine,
Lisa,
as a component of
Lisa, thank you for your call. What else has caffeine in it that we don't usually think about?
Well, now there's, of course, this huge variety of energy products that have caffeine. I think most of us know that, but I have been surprised to see the sort of variety and abundance of these caffeine products. I got a sprayable caffeine, spray on the skin caffeine product last week. There's caffeinated gel strips, caffeinated energy bars, caffeinated gum, you name it.
Spray on caffeine.
Yeah, I haven't tried this one yet. Yeah, you spray it on your skin.
And it absorbs through the skin and gives you a jolt?
That's the concept. It sounds rather weak. The instructions suggest if you don't see any effect, then you should quit caffeine for a week and try again.
Thinking about Lisa and her son, caffeine conundrum number three, kids sometimes report loving it, but parents freak out at the idea of children having caffeine. And yet I've heard some people say that some caffeine is okay for a kid and can help increase brain function. Is there good research that you've looked at?
There's not as much good research on adolescents and children and caffeine as there is on adults. And part of this is that it's more ethically difficult to do some of this. But kids do take a lot of caffeine, primarily through soft drinks, though increasingly the percentage that kids take through soft drinks is decreasing as soft drinks popularity decreases slightly, and coffee has been increasing. But children, I think 12 to 16-year-olds take about an average of 63 milligrams of caffeine a day, which is no small amount, because caffeine, if you're a smaller person, you get a larger effect from a smaller amount of caffeine, obviously. So anyone who has a child who's taking caffeine late at night and experiences sleep problems, of course, it would be worth considering, if they'd sleep better if they took less caffeine.
Jeff in Yonkers, you're on WNYC with Murray Carpenter, author of the book Caffeinated. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'd like to ask Mr. Carpenter about the difference between coffee and tea, like how much caffeine is in each, or if it's the body deals with the caffeine from either of those differently.
Mm-hmm. Coffee, tea, soda, same number of ounces, different doses of caffeine, Murray?
Yeah, absolutely. So tea tends to be a lot. There's just lower concentration of caffeine in tea than in coffee. And some people have also suggested that some of the other constituents of tea may sort of moderate the caffeine buzz from tea.
Although it depends on the kind of tea, right? Like certain kinds of green tea and black tea, pow.
Yeah, and it also depends on how long you soak it. So, you know, a 3-minute soak will maybe of black tea might have 30 milligrams of caffeine. 5-minute soak might have 50 milligrams. So you can get a fair amount of caffeine from tea, but typically, you know, considerably less than from a moderate cup of coffee. But, you know, people who a lot of people, for example, drink coffee in the morning and then tea in the afternoon when they want sort of a more moderate jolt.
David in Morristown, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love coffee. I've been living on it for 30 years. I drink it continuously from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to sleep. And I find that sometimes it relaxes me, that it has the opposite effect, that it doesn't give me the jitters at all. I also find that
different on different days, David?
I'm sorry?
Different on different days, you're saying?
No, it just doesn't give me the jitters at all. It actually relaxes me. And
I'm going to leave it there and ask you, I guess I'll frame that as caffeine conundrum number 4, Murray, because it works on almost everyone in some way. But as we hear from David, it can really vary. For instance, we did a little survey of our team, and there are some people on our staff who cannot drink any caffeine after 10 o'clock in the morning, or they won't be able to fall asleep that night. And then there's someone on our show who has to drink a cup of coffee around 7 p.m. or else will fall asleep at 9. So how is it possible that there's such a big range?
Okay, but the caller raises this great question, and I want to get to the range question you talk about. But the first thing is, if you're a habitual caffeine user and you do drink it from the moment you get up to the moment you go to sleep, as the caller does, then you have a tolerance and something of a dependence on caffeine, and hitting that optimal caffeine dose will make you feel better than being caffeine free. I mean, so that accounts, I think, for some of his relaxation. When he has several cups of coffee, he's sort of in his sweet spot right there. But the second question, just in terms of how it affects people differently, this is remarkable because, as your survey showed, there are some people who will have a cup of decaf and it will really send them through the roof. And that's a tiny amount of caffeine, you know, 12 milligrams. And others of us who could drink coffee to the moment we go to sleep and sleep like babies. A lot of this tends to be a genetic predisposition. Some people are just genetically predisposed to metabolize caffeine much more slowly than the rest of us. And it is remarkable at what low levels some of these people are able to detect the presence of caffeine.
All right. Big office debate. Caffeine conundrum number 5. Is it possible to say, on aggregate, whether a cup of coffee hydrates you compared to before you drank the coffee or dehydrates you?
Well, I wish you hadn't asked that question. All the recent research suggests that it doesn't dehydrate you, but I just have it's almost impossible to convince people of this because everyone has the experience that it seems to dehydrate you. It seems to make you want to go pee. It does not seem to dehydrate you. That's my impression.
And the way one recent guest put it on our show is caffeinated drinks will dehydrate you. No, let me say it right. Won't hydrate you as much as non-caffeinated drinks because the caffeine has a slightly dehydrating effect, but you're still taking in fluid that you wouldn't have taken in. So the net effect is still plus, just not as plus.
That sounds about right to me, yeah.
And we leave it there with Murray Carpenter, author of the book Caffeinated, How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. Listeners, continue to post your caffeine conundrums to our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Murray Carpenter, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me on.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.